Broadcasting from Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana, this is Democracy Now!
About who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
The fact of the matter is, he has not managed his city very, very well when he was there. He didn't get a whole lot done. He had stop and frisk, throwing close to 5 million young black men up against the wall.
Mike Bloomberg owns more wealth than the bottom 125 million Americans. That's wrong. That's immoral. That should not be the case when we got a 500,000 people sleeping out on the street.
Mayor Bloomberg, should you exist?
I can't speak for all billionaires.
You heard of the rumble in the jungle? In last night's Democratic debate, billionaire former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg was the pinata in Nevada. As the six leading candidates squared off, we'll unpack one of the most contentious debates of the long primary season in a roundtable discussion with the nation's Katrina VandenHeuvel, activist and journalist Raquel Willis, who's endorsed Senator Elizabeth Warren, Ana Maria Archila with the Center for Popular Democracy, which has endorsed Senator Bernie Sanders. In Houston, we'll speak with former Houston Mayor Anise Parker, now president of the LGBTQ Victory Fund, which endorsed Mayor Pete Buttigieg. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Nevada, the six leading candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination squared off Wednesday night in one of the most contentious debates of the primary season. Senator Bernie Sanders sought to defend his position as frontrunner, while former Vice President Joe Biden, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and Senator Amy Klobuchar tried to attract more supporters. Senator Elizabeth Warren led a night full of attacks on the new person on the stage, billionaire former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of hiding his tax returns, of harassing women, and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk.
Protests erupted at the end of the two-hour debate, just as former Vice President Joe Biden was set to begin his closing remarks. The protesters, Erica Andiola and Lucia Allain of the Texas-based immigrants' rights Raices, shouted at Biden, "You deported 3 million people," a reference to the record pace of deportations under President Obama. They chanted, "No kids in cages," and "Don't look away," as they were escorted from the auditorium. This is Erica Andiola speaking just after the protest.
We decided to interrupt. We're not sorry. The immigration debate today, immigration came the last issue that they talked about, and they didn't even have time to talk about the issue. This is not okay. We are being the most attacked by the Trump administration, and we deserve a conversation about how our lives are going to look like if any of those people get elected.
In more campaign news, former New York City mayor and billionaire Michael Bloomberg is under fire after newly surfaced video showed him making transphobic remarks less than a year ago. BuzzFeed News first reported on this comment from Bloomberg, which came last March during a Bermuda Business Development Agency conference in Manhattan.
If your conversation during a presidential election is about some guy wearing a dress and whether he, she, or it can go to and go to the locker room with their daughter, that's not a winning formula for most people.
Meanwhile, The Nation magazine reports Bloomberg's campaign is forcing its staffers to sign a 9-page non-disclosure agreement, or NDA, that could prevent them from reporting workplace abuse and discrimination. Critics say the NDA is overly broad to the point of preventing sexual harassment and incidents of racism from being reported. We'll have more on last night's Democratic debate after headlines. We'll have a roundtable discussion, including Katrina VandenHeuvel, publisher of The Nation magazine. The United Nations is warning of an unfolding humanitarian catastrophe in Syria's Idlib province as hundreds of thousands of people fleeing a Russian-backed Syrian offensive are being forced into an ever-shrinking area near the Turkish border. On Wednesday, UN Humanitarian Affairs Chief Mark Lowcock pleaded with the UN Security Council for an immediate ceasefire.
But in Idlib, nowhere is safe. Almost 50,000 are sheltering under trees or in other open spaces. I am getting daily reports of babies and other young children dying in the cold. Imagine the grief of a parent who escaped a war zone with their child, only to watch that child freeze to death.
The UN's warning came as the Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, threatened to launch his own military offensive in Idlib by the end of the month, unless Syrian troops withdraw behind a line of Turkish observation posts. Erdogan's warning drew a sharp rebuke from Russia's government, which supports Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. In Germany, a gunman with a high-powered rifle opened fire on patrons at two shisha bars in the town of Hanau Wednesday night, killing nine people. The 43-year-old suspect then returned to his home and killed his mother before turning a gun on himself. The attacks appeared to target people of Turkish and Kurdish ancestry, and German federal investigators said they're investigating the killings as a likely right-wing terror attack. The killings came a week after German police arrested 12 members of a far-right group and accused them of plotting to use semi-automatic weapons to murder worshippers at mosques and attacks that would mirror those carried out by a white nationalist gunman in Christchurch, New Zealand, last year. Chinese officials said Wednesday they're expelling three Wall Street Journal reporters from mainland China over the newspaper's coverage of the coronavirus outbreak. A government ministry spokesman cited a recent op-ed published in the journal headlined, "China is the real sick man of Asia," calling it racist. The expulsions drew condemnation from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. The chief executive of Dow Jones, which publishes the Wall Street Journal, said he regretted the upset and concern caused by the opinion piece to the Chinese people. This comes as two elderly people in Iran died after testing positive for the new strain of coronavirus. They're the first two deaths from the virus in the Middle East. President Trump on Wednesday named U.S. Ambassador to Germany Richard Grenell as his next director of national intelligence. Grenell is a staunch supporter of Trump on social media. He's also a gold-level member of the Trump Organization's Trump Card loyalty program. He brings to the job title little experience in intelligence or with heading a large government bureaucracy. Grenell can serve up to 210 days without Senate confirmation as acting DNI. He's expected to hold that position while keeping his ambassadorship to Berlin. President Trump's longtime ally, former advisor Roger Stone, is set to be sentenced by a federal judge in Washington, D.C. today on seven counts related to special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation, including witness tampering, obstruction, and making false statements. Overnight, shortly before 2 a.m., President Trump hinted at a pardon for Stone, pinning a video to his Twitter feed of Fox News host Tucker Carlson blasting federal prosecutors over Stone's case. This comes as the Washington Post reports the White House is moving to take more direct control over pardons and commutations, with Trump trying to limit the role of the Justice Department in the clemency process. Lawyers for Julian Assange told a London court Wednesday President Trump offered the WikiLeaks founder a presidential pardon if he agreed to publicly state Russia was not behind the leak of Democratic Party emails ahead of the 2016 election. The explosive allegation came as part of a legal filing by Assange's lawyers, who are seeking to block Assange's extradition to the United States, where he faces up to 175 years in prison. According to the lawyers, then Congressmember Dana Rohrabacher of California visited Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy in London in 2017, claiming he had instructions from President Trump to make a deal for a pardon. Rohrabacher has since denied the allegation, saying he was on a personal fact-finding mission. Meanwhile, lawyers for U.S. Army whistleblower Chelsea Manning filed a motion in federal court Wednesday asking for her release from a prison outside Washington, D.C., where she's been jailed since March of last year for refusing to cooperate in a federal grand jury investigation into WikiLeaks. Manning could be held as long as 18 months on contempt of court charges. In Mexico City, government investigators have opened a corruption probe into former Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto. The investigation stems from a broader case against Emilio Lozoya, the former head of Mexico's national oil company, Pemex. Lozoya was arrested last week in Spain, pending his extradition to Mexico, where he's charged with accepting millions of dollars in bribes from a Brazilian construction firm and a Mexican steel company. At the time of the alleged bribes, Lozoya was a top official in Peña Nieto's 2012 presidential campaign. In Arizona, a federal judge has ordered the U.S. Border Patrol to provide clean mats and thin blankets to migrants within 12 hours after they're brought to an immigration jail. Wednesday's court order came after immigrant rights groups sued the Trump administration over overcrowded, unsafe, unsanitary, freezing and inhumane conditions at 8 Border Patrol jails in Arizona. In Nashville, Tennessee, 58-year-old Nicholas Todd Sutton is scheduled to be electrocuted to death this evening after Governor Bill Lee declined to halt his planned execution. Sutton was convicted of 3 murders in 1979, later sentenced to death for fatally stabbing a prisoner in 1985. 7 current and former Tennessee prison workers have called for clemency for Sutton, saying he reformed to become a model prisoner. One of them, retired prison guard Tony Eden, says Sutton intervened to save his life during a prison riot in 1985. Unless tonight's execution is stopped, Sutton will become the 5th Tennessee prisoner to be killed by electric chair since 2018. A federal appeals court ruled Wednesday the state of Florida cannot require formerly incarcerated people to pay all fines related to their sentences before they can register to vote, comparing it to an unfair poll tax. Voting rights advocates warned the Republican-led move would have disenfranchised many of the 1.4 million people who were re-enfranchised in 2018 after Florida voters narrowly approved the historic ballot measure called Amendment 4. And in Argentina, thousands of reproductive rights activists held protests in dozens of cities Wednesday to renew their push to legalize abortion. Public support for abortion rights has grown since 2018, when a bill to repeal an abortion ban narrowly lost in the Argentine Senate. This is Pamela Martin, who joined a large protest in Buenos Aires city center.
Today is a day of action for safe, legal, and free abortion. This is our third protest. February 19th is a day for political influence, a day in which we ask ourselves to continue calling for, to demand, and to struggle for our right to decide.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting from Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. In Las Vegas, Nevada, the 6 leading candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination squared off Wednesday night in one of the most contentious debates of the long primary season. Senator Bernie Sanders defended his position as front runner in the Democrats' nomination fight, and former Vice President Joe Biden, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and Senator Amy Klobuchar tried to attract more supporters. Senator Elizabeth Warren led a night full of attacks on the new person on the stage, billionaire former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg, who struggled to address questions about his vast wealth, his defense of stop and frisk, and treatment of women. The debate began with a question from moderator Lester Holt.
A majority of Democratic voters still say their top priority is beating President Trump. Well, Senator Sanders, the first question to you. Mayor Bloomberg is pitching himself as a centrist who says he's best positioned to win in November. Why is your revolution a better bet?
In order to beat Donald Trump, we're going to need the largest voter turnout in the history of the United States. Mr. Bloomberg had policies in New York City of stop and frisk, which went after African-American and Latino people in an outrageous way. That is not a way you're going to grow voter turnout. What our movement is about is bringing working class people together, black and white and Latino, Native American, Asian American, around an agenda that works for all of us, and not just the billionaire class.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of hiding his tax returns, of harassing women, and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk. Look, I'll support whoever whatever the Democratic nominee is. But understand this. Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another. This country has worked for the rich for a long time and left everyone else in the dirt. It is time to have a president who will be on the side of working families and be willing to get out there and fight for them. That is why I am in this race, and that is how I will beat Donald Trump.
Senator,
well, to unpack all of this and so much more from the Las Vegas debate, we're hosting a roundtable discussion. I'm in Indiana. That's right. That's the home state of Pete Buttigieg. But joining me from New York is Katrina VandenHeuvel, editorial director and publisher of The Nation, America's oldest weekly magazine. She's also a columnist for TheWashingtonPost.com. Raquel Willis is an activist and journalist based in New York City. She's endorsed Senator Elizabeth Warren. Ana Maria Archila is co-executive director of the Center for Popular Democracy, which has endorsed Senator Bernie Sanders in December. And in Houston, Texas, Anise Parker is with us, former mayor of Houston, now president of the Victory Fund, which works to increase the number of openly LGBTQ officials in government and has endorsed Mayor Pete Buttigieg for president. The Victory Fund is the largest LGBTQ political action committee in the United States. We welcome you all to this Democracy Now! Roundtable. Katrina VandenHeuvel, let's begin with you. I mean, to say the least, it seems to me that Bernie Sanders was very lucky last night, because usually the guns are sort of focused on the number one candidate, but instead they were all focused on the person who's not in on the ballot in Nevada, and that is the newcomer to the stage, billionaire Michael Bloomberg.
That was one of the most fiery Democratic debates I think we've all lived through. Mayor Bloomberg seemed to amp everything up, and it's right that the targets were focused on Mayor Bloomberg. What was important was it seemed that all the candidates, especially Elizabeth Warren, warrior, back. You didn't hear the unity, and if debates are any measure, she is the comeback woman of last night. But I think, you know, Bernie Sanders spoke eloquently about what he's doing. I mean, he is building a majority coalition of workers across race and region. And Elizabeth Warren came out fighting and rightly took on Mayor Bloomberg for his comments about women and, more important, what's going on not only in his workplace, Bloomberg, the allegations of sexual harassment, workplace abuse, but as The Nation reported, Amy, and you spoke of this earlier, our D.C. correspondent Ken Klippenberg received an NDA campaign nondisclosure agreement that transparency experts say is so broad that it could really prohibit campaign staffers from reporting incidents of sexual harassment or workplace abuse. But I think last night you had in Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders the progressive wing of the party. They have won the ideas primary. Ideas once considered radical are at the center of this Democratic debate. Bernie Sanders is winning the money primary with small donors, a great counter to what the orgy of political spending Mayor Bloomberg is pushing out on this country. And you got to wonder, with all that money, where was the debate prep for this guy? I mean, it was lousy. So we don't need two dueling plutocrats, as Elizabeth Warren said eloquently. We need people who represent what the Democratic Party could be. So I think it was an important night, and we will see moving forward. But as we talked this morning, it does look, and one hates to put too much on polls because they're unpredictable, but Bernie Sanders is leading across racial, ideological, and economic, educational grounds, and certainly leading among a younger cohort. We'll see what the turnout looks like, Amy, because you heard Sanders. His theory of change is expanding the electorate and bringing in new voters and expanding a turnout that has to be huge in order to overcome what the president.
Well, I mean, as I understand it, the early voting in Nevada, which is a little confusing since it is a caucus state, more people, something like 70,000 people have voted. That's about equal to all that came out in the 2016 caucus. But let's go to part of the extended exchange between Mike Bloomberg and Elizabeth Warren on those allegations of sexual harassment. This begins with a question from Hallie Jackson.
Several former employees have claimed that your company was a hostile workplace for women. When you were confronted about it, you admitted making sexually suggestive remarks, saying, quote, "That's the way I grew up." In a lawsuit in the 1990s, according to the Washington Post, one former female employee alleged that you said, quote, "I would do you in a second." Should Democrats expect better from their nominee?
Let me say a couple things, and if I can have my full minute and a quarter, thank you. I have no tolerance for the kind of behavior that the Me Too movement has exposed. And anybody that does anything wrong in our company, we investigate it, and if it's appropriate, they're gone that day. But let me tell you what I do in my company and my foundation and in city government when I was there. In my foundation, the person that runs it's a woman. 70% of the people there are women. In my company, lots and lots of women have big responsibilities. They get paid exactly the same as men. And in my in City Hall, the person that's the top person, my deputy mayor, was a woman, and 40% of our commissioners were women. I am very proud of the fact that about 2 weeks ago, we were awarded, we were voted the most, the best place to work, second best place in America. If that doesn't say something about our employees and how happy they are, I don't know what does.
Senator Warren, you've been critical of Mayor Bloomberg on this issue.
Yes, I have. And I hope you heard what his defense was. I've been nice to some women. The mayor has to stand on his record. And what we need to know is exactly what's lurking out there. He has gotten some number of women, dozens, who knows, to sign non-disclosure agreements, both for sexual harassment and for gender discrimination in the workplace. So, Mr. Mayor, are you willing to release all of those women from those non-disclosure agreements so we can hear their side of the story?
We have a very few non-disclosure agreements.
How many is that?
Let me finish.
How many is that?
None of them accuse me of doing anything other than maybe they didn't like a joke I told. There's agreements between two parties that wanted to keep it quiet, and that's up to them. They signed those agreements, and we'll live with it.
So wait, when you say it is up to, I just want to be clear. Some is how many? And when you say they signed them and they wanted them, if they wish now to speak out and tell their side of the story about what it is they allege, that's now okay with you? You're releasing them on television tonight?
Senator, no.
Is that right?
Senator, the company and somebody else, in this case, a man or a woman, or could be more than that, they decided when they made an agreement that they wanted to keep it quiet for everybody's interest. They signed the agreements, and that's what we're going to live with.
I'm sorry. No, the question is, are the women bound by being muzzled by you? And you could release them from that immediately. Because understand, this is not just a question of the mayor's character. This is also a question about electability. We are not going to beat Donald Trump with a man who has who knows how many non-disclosure agreements and the drip, drip, drip of stories of women saying they have been harassed and discriminated against. That's not what we do as Democrats.
Mr. Vice President, Mayor Bloomberg, final word to you.
I said we're not going to get to end these agreements because they were made consensually, and they have every right to expect that they will stay private.
If they want to release it, they should be able to release themselves.
Can I add a word?
Say yes.
The last voice was former Vice President Joe Biden, but the main part, of course, billionaire Mayor Mike Bloomberg being attacked and criticized by Senator Elizabeth Warren. We are also joined by Raquel Willis. She is the executive editor of Out Magazine, and she personally has endorsed Elizabeth Warren. Can you respond to this back and forth?
Absolutely. I feel like Senator Warren came out swinging last night. She was not afraid. And if we're really going to talk about electability, she really demonstrated that last night. I mean, a lot of the conversation around her as a candidate has been whether people think that she could actually be elected or whether she could actually hold someone like Trump accountable. And we really saw also the failings of Mike Bloomberg. I mean, we see just how much of a demagogue, how disgusting Trump has been in his history and also currently in the policies that he has enacted. And so why would we think so much would change under a Bloomberg administration? And so I think Senator Warren really deftly came at him, made sure to hold him accountable in the moment, and really made a point about us not electing leaders who want to silence marginalized people, particularly women.
And of course, this is a key debate for Senator Warren, who's been slipping in the polls and fundraising, made a lot of money just last night as this debate was going on and afterwards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that this was the night that all of the supporters for Senator Warren have been wanting. I saw a lot of people saying on social media how, you know, where has this Senator Warren been? And she's always been there. I think now she is really taking a new strategy. She's making sure that people understand she's not just going to be there only to present her plans, but she's going to hold people accountable for what they have or have not put out plan-wise. I really think she had another strong moment, particularly around health care. I think she's garnered a lot of ire from the progressive wing of our electorate around her plan for Medicare for All, particularly in comparison to Senator Sanders. And I think she really made some great points about not thinking that Klobuchar really had a plan, you know, really thinking that Pete was kind of blowing, Mayor Buttigieg was really kind of blowing past some of the finer notes on what the people actually want. And people want health care. People want to be covered. So I think it was a great night for her. And I think that it also was just important that Bloomberg was fully held accountable fresh out the gate. I think a lot of folks have been worried about what his presence in the in the election season means. Folks have been very worried and saying, you know, he's buying the election. And of course, I think a lot more of it is about buying delegates more than anything else. But I think it was important for his first showing on the national stage to be one where he was really held to the fire. And we'll see, you know, what it looks like for him to maybe recover if he tries to do that. But I think Senator Warren had a great night.
If last night was a dress rehearsal for taking on Trump with Bloomberg as the stand-in, of course, former Republican, Warren clearly had a very good night, though very interesting how little Trump was raised last night. We're going to go to a break and then come back to more of this, what some are calling, well, much more than the rumble in the jungle, perhaps, Mayor Bloomberg, the piñata in Nevada. Stay with us.
Look, black is beautiful, black is excellent. Black is pain, black is joy, black is evident. It's working twice as hard as the people you know you're better than, cause you need to do double what they do so you can level them. Black is so much deeper than just African American. Our heritage been severed, you never got to experiment with family trees, cause they teach you about famine and greed and show you pictures of our fam on their knees. Tell us we used to be barbaric, we had actual queens. Black is watching child soldiers getting killed by other children, feeling sick like, oh shoot, this could have happened to me. Your mummy watching, telling stories about your dad and your niece. The blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. The kid dies, the blacker the killer, the sweeter the news. And if he's white, you give him a chance, he's ill and confused. If he's black, he's probably armed, you see him and shoot. Look, black is growing up around the barbershop. Mommy saying stay away from trouble, you're in
the Black by Dave. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting from Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. As we're looking at that debate in Nevada last night, yes, the Democratic debate in Las Vegas, where the six leading Democratic candidates faced off in one of the most contentious debates of the long primary season. This is Senator Elizabeth Warren criticizing her opponent's health care plans.
Mayor Buttigieg really has a slogan that was thought up by his consultants to paper over a thin version of a plan that would leave millions of people unable to afford their health care. It's not a plan, it's a PowerPoint. And Amy's plan is even less. It's like a post-it note. Insert plan here. Bernie has started very much, has a good start. But instead of expanding and bringing in more people to help, instead his campaign relentlessly attacks everyone who asks a question or tries to fill in details about how to actually make this work. And then his own advisors say, eh, probably won't happen anyway.
And this is a moderator, well, MSNBC's Chuck Todd, questioning Bernie Sanders.
There are some Democrats who like you a lot, but worry that this plan, Medicare for All, is going to take away private insurance and that it goes too far. Are they right?
No. Let me be very clear. 2 points. For 100 years, from Teddy Roosevelt to Barack Obama, this country has been talking about the need to guarantee health care for all people. And yet today, despite spending twice as much per capita, Chuck, twice as much as any other major country on earth, we got 87 million who are uninsured or underinsured. We got over 60,000 people who die every year because they don't get to a doctor on time. We're getting ripped off outrageously by the greed and corruption of the pharmaceutical industry, which in some cases charges us 10 times more for the same drugs because of their price fixing. 500,000 people go bankrupt every year because they can't afford medical bills. So let me be very clear to my good friends in the Culinary Workers Union, a great union. I will never sign a bill that will reduce the health care benefits they have. We will only expand it for them, for every union in America, and for the working class of this country.
And this is MSNBC moderator Chuck Todd questioning Senator Sanders. So that was what we just heard. We're going to go now to Anna Maria Archila, co-executive director of the Center for Popular Democracy. That's the progressive advocacy group that has endorsed Senator Sanders. Anna Maria, respond to the debate last night and particularly talk about health care.
Well, healthcare continues to be the most important issue for most people in this country. I knocked on doors in New Hampshire leading up to the primaries there. I knocked on doors in Nevada just a few days ago. And every person I spoke to said that healthcare was their number one issue. I met a young woman, Puerto Rican woman in New Hampshire, who told me that she pays $11,000 in premiums. She makes around $35,000 a year. And then she has to pay $5,000 deductible. And the health insurance that she has does not cover the things she needs. What Senator Sanders has committed to do is to make sure that everyone in this country can access health care without having to pay anything at the point of service, that all of us are going to contribute something to make sure that everyone can go to the doctor, that no one goes bankrupt because they have an illness, that no one has to choose between paying their rent and paying their health care. This is the most important issue for people across this country. And a commitment, a clear-eyed commitment to Medicare for All is the only way to make sure that we stop having this morally bankrupt system that prioritizes profit for insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies over the lives of people. There was a study just recently published by Yale University that documents how Medicare for All will save over $400 million a year for people in this country and 60,000 lives. The debate that is happening inside the Democratic Party about healthcare is actually about it's not just about healthcare, it's about what kind of democracy we have, what role does government play in people's lives. Bernie says the role that government should play is one of making sure that people have everything they live today to live everything they need to live with dignity. Healthcare, access to college without having to be burdened by debt forever, access to housing, the ability to take care of their families. And what centrist Democrats and billionaires like Mike Bloomberg say is, no, we need to the party should focus on still continuing to prioritize the needs of the 1%. And that is not what people want. And that's why millions and millions of people in this country are excited by Bernie Sanders' campaign and see themselves reflected in his platform and see in him someone they can trust, someone who they believe, because he has been very consistent for decades about the kinds of politics that he believes our country and our people deserve.
I wanted to also ask you, Ana Maria Chilla, who's just back from Nevada, then you're heading to go back there right away, about this questioning of Senator Amy Klobuchar.
Senator Klobuchar, you're running on your Washington experience, but last week in a Telemundo interview, you could not name the president of Mexico or discuss any of his policies. Last night, you defended yourself saying, quote, this is in jeopardy. But my question to you is, shouldn't our next president know more about one of our largest trading partners?
Of course. Of course. And I don't think that that momentary forgetfulness actually reflects what I know about Mexico and how much I care about it. And I first want to say greetings to President López Obrador. Secondly, what I meant by the game of Jeopardy is that I think we could all come up with things. You know, how many members are there in the Israeli Knesset? 120. Who is the president of Honduras? Hernandez.
I wouldn't liken this to trivia. I actually didn't know how many members were in the Knesset. So
well,
you got
there
me
you
there.
Go.
But you're staking your candidacy on your Washington experience. You're on the committee that oversees border security. You're on the committee that does trade. You're literally in part of the committee that's overseeing these things. And we're not able to speak to literally the first thing about the politics of the country to ourselves.
Are you trying to say that I'm dumb? Or are you mocking me here, Pete?
I made an error.
People sometimes forget names. I am the one that has, number one, has the experience based on passing over 100 bills. If I could respond, this was a pretty big allegation. He's basically saying that I don't have the experience to be president of the United States. I have passed over 100 bills as a lead Democrat since being in the U.S. Senate. I am the one, not you, that has won statewide in congressional district after congressional district. And I will say, when you tried in Indiana, Pete, to run, what happened to you? You lost by over 20 points to someone who later lost to my friend Joe Donnelly. So don't tell me about experience. What unites us here is we want to win.
Right.
And I think we should put a proven winner in charge of the ticket.
This is a race for president. If winning a race for Senate in Minnesota translated directly to becoming president, I would have grown up under the presidency of Walter Mondale. This is different.
Can I just defend Senator Klobuchar for a minute? This is not right. I understand that she forgot a name. It happens. It happens to everybody on this stage. Look, you want to ask about whether or not you understand trade policy with Mexico? Have at it. And if you get it wrong, man, you ought to be held accountable. For that. You want to ask about the economy and you get it wrong, you ought to be held accountable. You want to ask about 1,000 different issues and you get it wrong, you ought to be held accountable. But let's just be clear, missing a name all by itself does not indicate that you do not understand what's going on. And I just think this is
so. That was Senator Elizabeth Warren. Before that, former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and of course, Senator Amy Klobuchar. Sure. Ana Maria Chilla, your response to her forgetting. Also, Tom Steyer, the billionaire presidential candidate, also said he could not remember AMLO's name.
I mean, listen, we're not talking about a country far away from here. We're talking about the biggest neighbor, the country that with whom we have been negotiating border policy, the country from where most immigrants in this country come from. You have to know the name of the president of Mexico. You have to know who he is and what he stands for. López Obrador represents a whole transformation of Mexican politics. You cannot run for president and not know the basic facts. I understand people forget things in a moment. It did not seem like Senator Klobuchar had much to say about who López Obrador is or what he represents. It also speaks to the lack of attention to international policy, to border policy, to migration policy in all of these debates. We saw one question on immigration, the very last question. Only Senator Klobuchar was asked, and she was allowed to speak for several minutes on just platitudes about dreamers, when in reality, my community, immigrant communities, have been under attack in this administration relentlessly. People have been separated from their children at the border. People have been terrorized all over the country. There is a steady attack against local elected officials that are trying to protect residents of cities and sanctuary cities. And the debate last night was basically just allowing Amy Klobuchar, who just a few days before made really disparaging and silly pandering jokes in her conversation with the culinary workers, to allow her to just speak about dreamers without talking about the importance of undoing the immigration enforcement system that's hurting families and terrorizing communities, without asking her or any of the other candidates about how they will use their executive power to protect immigrants, to abolish ICE, to break up Border Patrol, to stop deportations. There was so much more to discuss. And the debate, again, like many of the other debates, did not go there.
As you said, there was only one question on immigration, but there were protesters who interrupted Vice President Biden at the end as they chanted, "You deported 3 million people, no kids in cages, don't look away." I wanted to bring Anise Parker into the conversation, former mayor of Houston, Texas, president of the LGBTQ Victory Fund, which works on increasing the number of openly LGBTQ officials in government, as endorsed Mayor Pete Buttigieg for president, as Amy Klobuchar tried to defend herself for forgetting the Mexican president's name by saying to Pete Buttigieg, "Are you suggesting that I'm done?" Your thoughts, Anise Parker?
I think in the heat of the moment, a lot of things were said last night. What I appreciated about Mayor Buttigieg is that, as he has done in every one of the debates, he continued to not just attempt to speak to Democratic primary voters. He was trying to speak to the broader American electorate and to keep focused on the priority in this campaign, which is to ultimately beat Donald Trump. It's unfortunate that we've reached the point in the campaign where people are throwing elbows on stage and not staying focused on, let's have a robust policy debate so that we can prepare ourselves for a win in November.
And why did you endorse, the Victory Fund endorse South Bend former mayor Pete Buttigieg?
Mayor Pete's candidacy, Mayor Buttigieg's candidacy, is why we exist as an organization. We are focused on achieving more equal representation of the LGBTQ community in American political life at all levels of government. We didn't endorse him when he first entered the campaign. In fact, I had a conversation with him and said, "You're going to have to get out there and compete on a level playing field and show that you belong on the national stage as a candidate for president." He did that over and over again, and last June we endorsed him. I believe personally, and I believe as the head of my organization, that he is the best candidate for this job.
I wanted to go to a moment that wasn't last night, but was the night before, when Pete Buttigieg was being questioned by Aaron Burnett. He was in a CNN town hall, and he was being asked about the horrific homophobic comments, of the conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh, who went into a homophobic rampage against Pete Buttigieg. This was Limbaugh on his radio show.
"They're looking at Mayor Pete. 37-year-old gay guy, mayor of South Bend, loves to kiss his husband on the debate stage. And they're saying, okay, how's this going to look? 37-year-old gay guy kissing his husband on stage next to Mr. Man Donald Trump. What's going to happen there? And they got to be looking at that, and they've got to be saying that despite all the great progress and despite all the great wokeness and despite all the great ground that's been covered, America's still not ready to elect a gay guy kissing his husband on the debate stage president.
So this was Erin Burnett questioning Pete Buttigieg about this in the town hall the night before the debate.
The idea of the likes of Rush Limbaugh or Donald Trump lecturing anybody on family values. I mean, one thing about my marriage is it's never involved me having to send hush money to a porn star after cheating on my spouse with him or her. So they want to debate family values? Let's debate family values. I'm ready.
Anise Parker, if you'd like to respond.
Well, you have Rush Limbaugh doing the same shtick Rush Limbaugh has done for a couple of decades now, and Pete Buttigieg going directly to that. We know as an organization, and I know personally, that Americans will vote for capable, qualified LGBT candidates when they are the right candidate for the job and they have the good policies and they are prepared to lead. We have elected LGBTQ leaders at every level of government in America, every state, every level, every position, except President of the United States. That's just the next step. I happen to believe that Pete Buttigieg is ready for that next step, and he's positioned himself, and he's not going to take the bait. That's what's so amazing about Pete's ability to focus on the issues and let the attacks fall away. Do I believe that Americans are ready for an LGBT president? Yes. Do I believe Americans are ready for a woman president? Yes. Do I believe Americans are ready to vote Donald Trump out of office? Yet, and one of the people, yes, and yet, one of the people on that stage last night has to be ready to step up and take the mantle. I'm proud of all of the candidates. I am particularly proud that as a body, as a party, Democrats have advanced so far on LGBTQ issues, but they're not that far away from where the American population is as well.
Raquel Willis, you're the executive editor of Out Magazine. Your thoughts on Pete Buttigieg and why you chose to endorse Senator Warren?
So I think that it's great, you know, that he is an openly gay candidate. However, I do think that it's important for us to remember that your identity isn't enough. And exactly what was just said, As a black trans woman, it doesn't necessarily tell me what you stand for when you tell me that, you know, we're in the same community. And for me, it was important to really endorse someone that I feel has been very intentional about their outreach, particularly to LGBTQ organizers, black and brown organizers who are on the ground. And so the campaigns that have done that work have really spoken to me. And I think Senator Warren has done that probably better than, actually, I would say she's definitely done that better than the other campaigns. The other thing I will say is that I think what also is important is when I really look at what Mayor Buttigieg stands for, he stands for the status quo. He stands for us kind of not really rocking the boat enough. He feels that particularly someone like Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is really out there interested in tackling corruption on all levels in the government, is really gunning for a fight that isn't necessary. And I think that that is so necessary. I think that we really have to have a conversation about how even when you are of a marginalized group, you may have many privileges. And so the way that the world operated in 2016, in 2016 before Trump was in office may have been fine for you. I mean, I think that for a lot of LGBTQ folks, particularly those who are black and brown and more marginalized, we need more. We do need a revolution. People
were hurting before. We need people who are fighting for those who are incarcerated, fighting for those who are detained, fighting for those who are trying to access a healthcare system that has really ignored them for so long. And I think that someone like Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is really trying to uproot and get out of here all of that corruption, is who we need to be standing behind in this moment. Because as you will notice, and particularly this mayor's closing statement last night, he made a statement that he's gunning for people who aren't interested in a status quo and aren't interested in a revolution. That really makes no sense. You know, I think that you have to be very clear about where you stand. And for me, I think maybe he's afraid to say that he stands for the status quo. But I know what the people that I roll with in the LGBTQ community are looking for. And they're looking for something that is going to blow past the status quo that has forgotten us for so long.
Or another way Pete Buttigieg put it was, we shouldn't have to choose between one candidate who wants to burn this party down and another who wants to buy this party out. We have to break, and then we're going to come back to the discussion. This is Democracy Now. Stay with us. That's the instrumental version of Tried by 12 by the East Flatbush Project. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting to you from Indiana. As we debrief on the Democratic presidential primary debate last night in Las Vegas, where the six leading candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination squared off, let's go to a question from MSNBC's Chuck Todd on delegates to the Democratic National Convention.
Should the person with the most delegates at the end of this primary season be the nominee, even if they are short of a majority? Senator Sanders, I'm going to let you go last here because I know your view on this. So instead, I will start with you, Mayor Bloomberg.
Whatever the rules of the Democratic Party are, they should be followed. And if they have a process, which I believe they do,
I'm trying to do
so
this
that everybody else,
fast.
Everybody can
So you want the convention to work its will?
Yes.
Senator Warren.
But a convention working its will means that people have the delegates that are pledged to them, and they keep those delegates until
the leading
you come
person?
To the convention.
No?
All
okay.
of the people.
All righty. Vice President Biden?
Play by the rules.
Yes or no? Leading person with the delegates, should they be the nominee or not?
No. Let the process work its way out.
Mayor Buttigieg?
Not necessarily. Not to listen
Senator
to
Senator Klobuchar?
Let the process work.
Senator Sanders?
Well, the process includes 500 superdelegates on the second ballot. So I think that the will of the people should prevail. Yes.
First thank you, guys.
Most votes should become the nominee.
That last voice, of course, Senator Bernie Sanders, who at this point, according to all the polls, is the front runner with the Nevada caucus on Saturday. Katrina Vandenhoevel, editorial director and publisher of The Nation, explain the brokered convention and what Bernie Sanders was saying and what the other candidates were saying.
Let me step back for a minute, though, if I might, Amy. One reason The Nation is holding a debate this coming Monday, February 24th, Sanders versus Warren, Sanders and Warren, time to choose, is that The Nation has not endorsed a candidate yet, except we've endorsed the deepening of the left lane in our politics, the deepening of issues, bold issues that both Sanders and Warren have pushed, in the belief that in solidarity— And you saw last night at the debate a kind of tacit truce between them when the moderator asked Warren to talk about Bernie Sanders supporters and the alleged abuse online. She said, no, I'm going to talk about Bloomberg. He's the real threat to what we believe. And I think that solidarity is important moving forward to the convention, because if Bernie Sanders comes in and doesn't have enough delegates. He is winning pluralities, but the size of the turnout is going to be critical in these next states to bring him enough delegates to get into that convention with 50 plus. He's going to need to turn to allies. If you don't win on that first ballot, as Bernie Sanders said, he got a little wrong because I think it's 700 superdelegates, not 500. It will get thrown to the superdelegates who are, you know, they are the establishment of the Democratic Party. In some cases, they're also organizers. Ai Jen Poo of the Domestic Care Workers is a superdelegate, which surprises some. But for the most part, they are the electeds, the establishment, those who really were for Hillary Clinton in 2016. So if you have a contested election, it goes to a second ballot, and the superdelegates throw it not to the one with the most delegates, maybe Bernie Sanders, with support from Warren, you could see an outrage and a sense of a rigged convention that would deflate enthusiasm, deflate turnout in the general. And I think that is a real concern for many. And I think that's why the process should play out fairly and why people should come to our debate on the 24th to hear two candidates, their views. We will have their surrogates, too. Zephyr Teachout, great expert on corruption, who ran for attorney general recently, Bhaskar Sankara of Jacobin, and on the side of Elizabeth Warren, Maurice Mitchell of the Working Families Party, Brad Lander of the City Council. But I think this is a moment, arguably, where America is really eager for bold leadership, bold progressive ideas. I will say one more thing about Chuck Todd and the moderation. This is something that you have talked a lot about, Amy. The media coverage, it almost seems, especially television panels, cable panels, or these moderated debates, people seem to have a hard time with a framework for understanding progressive politics. There's a rootedness in the status quo and a failure of imagination to imagine a world beyond the status quo. And I think that really hurts our discussion, our politics. Imagine if a moderator asked a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, what are the costs of not doing the Green New Deal or Medicare for All? Or why are there no questions from the moderators often, Amy, about the cost of endless war? But there's always a question about the cost of doing major, bold programs that would improve
the
lives
of people. There were no major questions on foreign policy, but I wanted to go to end with Ana Maria Chila, who's just come back from Nevada and going back there. In 2016, although Hillary Clinton won, I believe that Bernie Sanders polled a great deal higher among the Latino community, and the Latino community is coming out in force in Nevada, which is about something like almost 30% of the vote, a third of the vote. Your final thoughts as we move into the Nevada caucus on Saturday?
Well, the Latino community has been under intense attack by this president, by President Trump, but also has been at the bottom of our economy, has been at the bottom of school graduations. And I think what Sanders speaks to my community is this idea that he is committed to building a country that includes all of us. So when he says that we're going to have healthcare for all, and that includes everybody, including undocumented people, that's what my people hear. When he says that he's committed to making sure that we have debt-free college, and that will include also young people who are new in this country, that speaks volumes to my community. I think what we are seeing, a big difference that we're seeing from 2016 to now, is that Bernie Sanders has really been able to create the most multiracial, most diverse coalition of young people, people of color, Black folks, Latinx folks, immigrants who see
Ana Maria Archila, I'm going to have to end it there, but I want to thank you so much for being with us. Ana Maria Archila, co-director of the Center for Popular Democracy. Katrina Vandenhoevel, publisher of The Nation magazine. Activist and editor Raquel Willis, executive editor of Out magazine. And former Houston Mayor Anise Parker. I want to thank you all for being with us. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for development manager position and news production fellowship and news producer. Check our website at democracynow.org. Tomorrow, it's the anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X. The case is being reopened. I'm Amy Goodman from Indiana. Thanks so much.